Welcome to a special town hall edition of Outreach, live from the Barrymore Theater. Now here's your host, Darrell Connor.
Welcome to the second hour. Outreach News Talk Radio, 1310 WIBA, also 92.1 The Mic. We are simulcasting live from the Barrymore Theater, closing the achievement gap. As you can probably tell, I'm a little hyped up. I'm a little excited and passionate about this issue. And I hope you are too. Thank you so much, everybody, for coming out. We have heard from Lucy Mathiak, we've heard from Ed Hughes, we've heard from Mary Burke, we've heard from Michael Flores. I want to turn the attention to someone who is from this area. He grew up here, he left for a while, and he came back to lead the Urban League of Greater Madison. And you might have heard him in the news a little bit over the past year or so. He is CEO of the Urban League. Kaleem Kerr joins us. Kaleem, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
All right, Kaleem. I mean, it's been quite a year, and I want to ask you this first off. I took the opportunity to look through some archives of you back in the day. Mm-hmm. You were much younger and less gray hair and a little bit more slimmer.
Yes, but, thank you for that.
so was I. So, but I had a chance to look through the archives, and what was interesting to me was the amount of things that you were involved in when it came to education in this community. And at one point, a lot of people may not know this, but at one point, Kaleem Kerr ran for the school board, and there was a lot of support for Kaleem when he ran for the school board. And it almost seems like life has just done a complete 360 on you, or at least a 180, I should say. Mm-hmm. What changed between that time in the 90s when I saw you in those articles, and when you came back to Madison? I mean, have you changed, or has the community changed?
I don't know if the community's changed all that much, but, you know, my views haven't changed all that much. You know, I've had the same feelings I had before about education I have now. I think the major difference that when I left Madison, I was actually seeking opportunities to try to create educational environments for our children that they could succeed in, while at the same time trying to pursue reform and improvements in public education. It's an old school African-American desire, drive that comes out of the history of independent African-American schools. And knowing that we live in a time now where independent type schools that just serve African-American children, I don't even think that that's the most beneficial way to go. But certainly creating and customizing schools to the needs of kids can be an effective tool. And so I actually came back here to try to help. And so, yeah, it is interesting to see that a lot of the people who were on my campaign list and SHEET and the unions and MTI and everybody who supported me, they now have this different view, and they say it's because of vouchers or it's because of this. But the ironic thing is none of them have sat down to talk to me about what my views really are. They've taken what they've heard in the press about one school, and they've used that and, I guess, assumed what I'm about because of my affiliations. As an African American in this country where we have no money, very few resources, there are very few very wealthy black people who can support things. You have to work with whomever will reach a handout to you and support you. And I have no apology for taking the support from people who will give it.
Well, you know, that was the next question I was going to ask you, because, you know, a lot has been said about you and about your association, so to speak, and a lot has been written in blogs and on social media and other places. I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, and I think a lot of that is being done, you know, through the press and through social media, but it's not being done, I guess, in person and face to face. And that's one of the things that bothers me. But explain and talk to folks and set. I think at least, I don't know if it's set the record straight, but talk to folks about some of the organizations that you've worked with. I know you kind of touched on it because mm-hmm. you said, look, you make no apologies about it. But I think it's important for people to hear from you directly about that.
Sure, sure. And let me start this too, because this will give you just a very quick history. It's interesting that in the district's plan right now, there are a number of initiatives. They talk about the expansion of the people program. I was the person who, in a meeting about Plan 2008, when I was working at the Department of Public Instruction, worked hard to impress upon people the need to use pre-college programs, not as expense drivers for the university, but as ways to actually get kids onto campus. And Paul Barrows brought myself, Cleveland James, and Walter Lane to the table, and out of that came people. The ITA program that my wife was the spearhead for, she and her boss sat down at our little place in Eagle Heights and created that idea. The SHAPE tutorial program, which was a combination, Ken Zeichner was very involved in Schools of Hope early on. That, and you have the Urban Leagues Project Jama program, and a lot of the resources that Leslie and Howard and others were putting into education, all of that came together and created Schools of Hope. So you have all of these things that I've been involved in, and you go to DC, what people don't hear is that there are over $500 million since 2003 that have flowed into the District of Columbia's public schools, unprecedented that Congress has ever given money to the District of Columbia outside of its budget. Most of that money has went towards public school reform. Some of it has went towards the expansion of high quality charter schools. And the other part of it has went to a voucher program that I created. And so when people say it's the right wing that did this, they don't know that most of those right wing organizations tried to undermine our legislation. Because number one, they didn't have control of it. Number two, the Heritage Foundation was very supportive. The Cato Institution was neutral. And the Federalist Society and ALEC and all these other groups that people talked about worked against it. Because they all had their ideological views about vouchers. Where we supported school vouchers for low-income kids. And it was the mayor, the city, the chair of the council, Education Committee, Kevin Chavis, a bunch of Democrats, black ministers, and others who got together and said, you know, we need to do something. And so we couldn't get people to agree on one thing. So we did what we called a three-sector initiative. We brought the private, the charter, and the public school people together, along with the business community, the White House, because the district gets its budget approved by Congress. We had to use business leaders from Minnesota and everywhere to get legislators to weigh in. And people don't know the story behind that story, that we created something that was very phenomenal in the District of Columbia. So to work in that environment where partisanship is killing us, I just came from DC, meeting with the secretaries of four agencies, and the partisanship is so thick, nothing's moving. I refuse to play that game. I refuse to play that game. So if people want me on one side or the other, they will never get me there. They can drag me, they can do whatever, but they will never get me there because that is an ineffective way to do business.
Kaleem Kerr joins us, News Talk 1310 WIBA, 92.1 the mic. And you know, Kaleem, you weren't here when we started the program, and one of the things I said was is that, you know, when it comes to an issue like this, politics doesn't matter. You know, for me, I look at it simply as this. Unless it's a person or a group or organization that is hell-bent on destroying, whether it's the public school system or producing a prison industrial complex, trying to put as many black folks and Latinos and poor whites in prison as possible, if you have, unless it's something like that, some fringe thing, If you have ideas that you can bring to the table that will deal with some of these statistics out there that our young people are facing, I'm going to listen. And it sounds like that's the same thing you did.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, coming back here, I knew because my family has been here so long and they've always been very active socially, politically in this community. I know that there's two things that hold us back. It's the fact that we don't think outside of our 86 square miles. And second, it's our mindset. Those two things hold us back. Where we believe, as someone said, the Madison way, I don't think that they said that to be negative as it was characterized. And I certainly was shocked by it, but I don't think they meant that. But what that means to some of us is that there are some of us who have always lived in a position of not having. And there are others who, I call it, they have a luxury of working with poverty, working within our communities. They don't come from that, right? And so those of us who have lived that life, whether we're black, white, or others, we're always striving to move beyond that while valuing existence in the history that we've come from. I came back to Madison and I felt, you know, we really do have to shake things up. We have to make sure that people understand what's going on with our kids. And the fact that people would yell and argue with me and paint me as a demon because I pointed out something that the person who we pay $200,000 to in our school district did not point out, right? Right. Poor Leslie Ann Howard, if it wasn't for her keeping her foot on the pedal for the last 15 years pushing this issue, we wouldn't be talking, there wouldn't have been a consciousness for me to speak to, not a collective one. And so we put the data out there, the data's all true, and it shows what we have done and what we have not done. And there are teachers who see that and they don't wanna be portrayed as somebody who's contributed to that. But I think every teacher knows there are teachers in our schools who shouldn't be teaching. And there are teachers in our schools who get no credit for the tremendous amount of effort that they put forward every day. What I asked John Matthews was, John, you all better than anybody, your people, your teachers, better than anyone could be the ones driving this bus right now because they are in the weeds with these kids and they see the good, the bad, and the ugly, however effective or ineffective that they are. This plan that the superintendent put forward, I give Dan a lot of credit for stepping out there on that, but I would have liked to see a plan that pulled the five greatest teachers from every school along with the most effective principals that we have, and let them really talk about what's happening in the school system right now that's getting results. And then let's have that group also, because they are effective, look outside the school system, take some tours and do things like that to see what's working, form partnerships with other communities, and bring those things to manifest them right here. People look at Madison Prep and say, oh, he's not about public school reform. Well, that's because we were driving a Madison Prep agenda. And if anybody knows, if you're trying to do anything new, you got to keep focused on it, right?
I'm going to stop you right there because we got to take a break. When we come back, Kaleem's going to be on later on. You're going to get a chance to ask Kaleem questions. We're going to be back with Michael Johnson. We're going to spend a few minutes with him. And then we'll have our Q&A session. You're listening to 1310 WIBA, 92.1 The Mic, live at the Barrymore, closing the achievement gap. We'll be back.
You're listening to a special town hall edition of Outreach Live from the Barrymore Theater. Once again, here's Darrell Connor.
Welcome back to the Barrymore Theater. We are live, closing the achievement gap. News Talk 1310 WIBA 92.1. The Mic. Darrell Connor back with you. Joining me at this time is the CEO and president of the Boys and Girls Club. He is Michael Johnson. Michael, it is great to have you here. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You look, I'm going to tell you right now, you look nice and tan from your vacation.
Yeah. Got to spend a week and a half with my wife and kids, and it was a real blessing.
Great. And thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us. Michael, you know, you had some huge news a couple weeks ago, and I want you to take us just back in time and talk about that event.
Absolutely.
And what happened. And the results and what you're going to do.
Yeah. My organization wanted to do everything that we could to make sure that we're focusing on kids. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. And so I reached out. I used to work with the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, in Chicago. And I wanted the U.S. Department of Education to kind of bring some awareness around. But we are doing some good things here in Madison. But at the same time, we got issues that we need to address. So the secretary sent down his chief management officer and met with people in the community, and also was part of a big announcement that we made. About a year ago, we had the University of Wisconsin to conduct a study on the kids that's in our Avid Tops program. And a lot of folks know that 100% of our kids in the last two classes that we have had in the MMSD has not only graduated from high school, but more than 95% of our kids are in college this semester. The study also shows that, thank you. The study also shows right now we have about 500 students that's in our program. We'll expand that program to about 800 students. The study shows that our students have better GPAs, They take more rigorous courses. Their discipline issues are down. And so we want to make sure that we can do everything that we can at our agency to make sure that we get principals and teachers support in the classroom. At the end of the day, how do we move the academic needle and how do we make sure that our young people can be great? So I grew up in Chicago. I went to a Chicago public school, and they socially promoted me. And so by the time I got to college, I went to the University of Minnesota, don't hold it against me, but I couldn't academically compete. I got a football scholarship and found myself being kicked out of school and had to go back to junior college. And it took me 8 years to get my bachelor's degree because I had to take almost 2.5 years of preparatory courses at Malcolm X College in Chicago. So it was once I got my reading up to par, I got my bachelor's degree and my master's degree, all with these. And so we want to make sure, thank you, we want to make sure that when kids come to our Boys and Girls Clubs, that our kids can read and our kids can write. We don't want kids coming into our clubs to come in to shoot pool and to play basketball. So last year we hired certified teachers that come in our buildings every single day, and before any kid walk in our club, they're going to tutoring. So the Boys and Girls Club is going to be like an extended school day. So the announcement that we made, we announced a $3 million campaign. Over the next 24 months, we're going to raise $3 million to help support the academic achievement gap. That night, we secured $1 million. $547,000 came from the Great Lakes Higher Education Corporation. And then this community stepped up and made an investment in our young people. Our organization, we're going to work with whoever that's serious about the achievement gap, whether it's the Urban League or United Way or Central Hispano. We're not going to play these divisive games. At the end of the day, our kids need support. We cannot waste another day being divisive. We cannot waste another day arguing and going back and forth. And to be quite frank, I'm sick of hearing it, and so we got to do something about it.
Michael Johnson joins us, News Talk 1310 WIBA, 92.1 the mic. Michael, critical question I want to ask. What can be done in Madison that you see as a person who deals with kids every single day? Mm-hmm. What would, if you were the superintendent, and nothing mm-hmm. against Dan Nierad,
yeah.
I like him a lot, he's a good man.
Yeah.
If you were superintendent, how would you address the achievement gap?
Yeah, I think what we have to do is, as a community, start making excuses. Our kids are bright. Our kids are smart. Our kids just need people that can believe in them. And so I believe that nonprofit organizations, the business community, all have to come together and invest resources in our schools. I think it's a crying shame that we spend almost $40,000 a year to incarcerate a person, but on a federal level, we only spend about $4,000 to educate a child. There's something wrong with that picture. And so I think what we have to do is a few things. One, we do have to get additional support in the classrooms to support our teachers, and that's why Boys and Girls Clubs, we have hired tutors. We have more than 40 tutors that's in the classrooms with teachers. We also got to make sure we get kids the academic support after school, and then connect. We have to look at each individual child and get them the support that they need, so whether it's academically. And so one of the things that we have done at Boys and Girls Clubs, we have assigned all of our kids case managers. And while we're not trying to address all the issues by ourselves, but how do we connect the dots? Someone told me in Madison there's more nonprofits on a per capita basis than any city in the United States. So somehow we have to figure out how do we connect the dots? How do we bring all of our resources together? How do we engage parents? How do we connect parents? How do we get them involved in the schools? How do we get the teachers the training and the support that they need? How do we get all of the nonprofits and all these folks that want to do positive things for young people, how do we get them all aligned to support one agenda? Now, I'm so glad. Kaleem's a friend of mine. And the fact that I got here 2 years ago And I think one of the first people I met with was Leslie Ann Howard. And she has shared with me some of the issues that young people was facing in this community. But the fact of the matter is, if it was not for the Urban League, this conversation probably would not be taking place tonight. And so I think instead of trying to demonize, whether it's the Urban League or the Teachers Union, folks, let's stop playing games. And let's come up with an agenda that's going to support the educational needs of our kids.
Michael Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. When we come back, I'm going to have Lucy Mathiak, Ed Hughes, Michael Johnson, Kaleem Kerr, all up here. It will be a question and answer session. You're listening to 1310 WIBA, 92.1 The Mic, live at the Barrymore. You're listening to Closing the Gap, Closing the Achievement Gap. News Talk 1310 WIBA. We'll be back.
It was the 3rd of September.
Our special town hall edition of Outreach Live from the Barrymore Theater continues. Once again, here's Darrell Connor.
Welcome back. News Talk 1310 WIBA, 92.1 The Mic. We are live at the Barrymore, closing the achievement gap, and now is the Q&A session. Here's your chance to ask some of our guests a question, make a comment, suggestion, whatever you'd like. So please do not be shy. They are here. They're awaiting your questions, and we have one right over here.
All right. First off, just thank you for having this show and you know, giving us the opportunity to speak. My name is Kong Bang. I'm a special education teacher here for the Madison School District. And in the midst of the achievement gap discussion, I think one story that is missing is also those of the Asian American experience, and particularly myself being Hmong, our experience too. Thank you. Our refugee experience is very different and unique, but at the same time, we share common barriers within the school district. And I really just want to include our discussion, or our stories as well, into this discussion, and the fact that we have unique issues, but common issues that we need to address. And there's so much that I want to address. We have parents who have to take care of the young ones, who are working second shift, and they got to take care of their elderly parent as well. But they care about their kids' education. And so how do we meet the needs of those students? And how do we engage students when their history is not covered in the classroom and not made relevant to them? And so I'll leave you with this. There's a lot more I wanted to discuss about, but if there's time later, I'll come back. Thank you.
Thank you. You raise excellent points. And we have a wealth of cultures in our schools, and we need to do what we can to make sure that everyone feels welcome and whose their culture and background feels honored. How that's done in the particular schools is a challenge that isn't necessarily something I think that we can address or solve at the Board of Education level. I think that's one reason why we really need to empower our principals on our individual schools and teachers there to be able to the extent possible, to make sure that the curriculum and the resources are ones that are responsive to all the students in the schools, because we do have different schools where there are different compositions of the student bodies that we need to be sensitive to. And it's as I was mentioning before, many of the proposals in the achievement gap plan aren't targeted to particular groups of students or particular ethnicities or backgrounds. They're ones that are, most of them are ones that are, should be beneficial, I think, to all students in our schools. So those are ones that everyone can benefit from. But I hear what you're saying about making sure that we are aware of all the groups in our schools and do what we can to make sure that we're responsive and giving all students what they need respecting them and being aware to the extent when we can of their particular needs and backgrounds where we perhaps aren't being as responsive as we could be. So.
I just wanted to say thank you for coming forward and for the work that you're doing to bring Hmong voices into the conversation about our schools. A few years ago, my colleagues and I were part of some of the most painful hearings that I'd ever experienced to that point. And that those were the hearings over what to name our new school. And it was a very difficult time for many reasons. I certainly learned a lot about the Hmong experience in Wisconsin, which is, it's one of those things that if it can be completely invisible to most of us. And I think I learned a lot from going through the school naming hearings. I've had the privilege of meeting with members of the Hmong community, members of the Hmong elders, to talk about the deep concerns about the future of their kids and about connections and engagement and the worry, the very real worry that their kids are going to go off the tracks and not finish and not go on. And I know a lot of kids do not only finish but go on to college and do very well, but on a community level and on a parent level and on a in a culture where the intergenerational relationships are so very important, the achievement of Hmong youth is an issue that affects not just those youth but generations above and below, and helping us to know what would be helpful and important to the Hmong community is one of the most important things that could happen. We have a large population. We have different generations. Some people were born in the United States. Some people came in the last wave of refugees. It's not one size fits all, but perhaps with some communication, we could develop some enlightened approaches to how to work better with communities that we're not connecting with. I see the same issue with the African American community. I think part of the biggest issue is being willing to listen when people come forward with concerns and needs and express a desire to do things better and differently. There has to be somebody to receive that and then move forward and integrate that into how the daily operations take place. I think when we start doing that and get better at that, we will start closing the achievement gaps for a large number of groups, but we need that active engagement.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that the district should require teachers through their continuing education to take continuing education courses in the history and culture of the people and the children that they educate. I think teacher education is where it starts. We have so many teachers that come from rural Wisconsin to our school, school of education here in Wisconsin and here in Madison, and they have very little, if any, interaction with people of color. And we don't give them much of an experience while they're on campus. So then they go into the schools and it's okay, here's a pen, here's a grading booklet, and here's some curriculum to teach these kids. And that's a very difficult thing to do if you can't draw a connection with them. And so a couple of things that could be done. I think about the Badger Rock School. The Hmong people are some of the best farmers in the world. In the world. Do you know what I'm seriously? Why are they not connected to that program? I could see us creating and investing in innovation in the Hmong community and helping them create some of the innovations in agriculture that we're trying to create here in this community and do it through that school. A lot of people don't know that the Hmong came from China. They settled in the mountains of Laos and moved around to Vietnam and elsewhere. They couldn't live in the jungle. The Laos didn't want them there, so they had the jungle or the mountain to choose from. And since they were farmers, they chose the mountains where the soil was rich, and that's where they lived. But there's a lot of history and skill there that we could be taking advantage of. So, Kong, I think that there's ways to do that here in Madison. We could start doing some of that now.
At this time, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more of your questions next. You're listening to 1310 WIBA 92.1 The Mic Town Hall, Closing the Achievement Gap. We'll be back.
You're listening to a special Town Hall edition of Outreach Live from the Barrymore Theater. Once again, here's Darrell Connor.
Welcome back to the Barrymore, News Talk 1310 WIBA and 92.1 The Mic, Closing the Achievement Gap Town Hall meeting.
We have a Q&A session. We have Kaleem Kerr, Lucy Mathiak, Ed Hughes, and Michael Johnson joining us on stage. And I want to go to the next question here.
Hi. Thank you all for being here tonight. This is such a very important topic, and I think it's important. You know, I just wanted to say conversations like this about the achievement gap have been lacking in the community for so long. You know, it's one of those secret conversations that people have had, but they don't really want to discuss it out loud because people are afraid to really talk about it because they know it exists. And finally now we have people that are willing to come out to the forefront, talk about it, say, hey, we need to do something about this because 40 years, 30 years is way too long. I bring my son, who's 11, to all these different meetings because I want him to understand how hard people are working on his behalf. I also want him to hear all the negative things that people are saying as well, because he needs to understand that he has to work hard. He has to understand that there are people that don't care if he's successful. Yes. You know, and that's an unfortunate part of it. One question I had is, I want to ensure that all these dialogues, the outlines, the conversations continue. However, I want to see action, and I don't just want to continue with the paper stuff. I want to see action. How do we ensure action happens sooner rather than later?
Who wants to take that?
That's our obligation. We have an achievement gap plan that's, well, it's not a plan, a range of proposals that have been brought forth, and we're having community conversations and discussions about those. And it is up to the school board ultimately to choose to take action on that to the extent we can. See what kind of resources we are responsibly able to dedicate to those initiatives, and then decide what are the best ones to select. So I think that we're all eager to have the community feedback as to what of the various proposals that could be pursued, what are the ones that really rise to the top in terms of being willing to make the financial commitment to do that, so that we can see the kind of progress, or at least start to see the kind of progress that we all know we haven't seen, and that we need to do more to foster. And then you simply have to hold the individual members of the board accountable for what we decide to do. I don't know what else that we could say, but that ultimately is our responsibility, no one else's, and it will be up to us to either do the kind of job the community wants or to fall short. So keep paying attention and tell us how we're doing.
I think that's a great question, and I think not only do we need to hold the school board accountable, we have to hold the superintendent, the staff, the principals, the parents, nonprofit leaders. We can't just let this issue just fizzle out. I remember one day I was sitting in Kaleem's office, and he showed me a report. I think it was from 1953, and it was some of the same issues that they were talking about back then. And so we have to figure out how do we move on this very quickly. Too many of our kids are dropping out of our schools. Too many of our kids are entering into the penal system, and so we have to figure this out yesterday. Now, my agency, and I'm going to say this, there are some good things that's taken in place, whether it's the Schools of Hope program or the People's program. Our agency, we stepped out there on faith and said, look, we're going to try to raise $3 million over the next 2 years to help, you know, tackle this issue. And we're not just going to run an after-school program in our facilities, but we're going to support teachers and the principals in the classroom. And so I think what we have to do is figure out how do we hold everyone accountable, including our own children. I have two kids, and as a parent, even as a working mom, you know, my mom had mental health issues, but worked two jobs. But it was hard for her to come home and to tutor us, but she sent me to the local Boys and Girls Club where she knew that they were going to help support and tutor our kids. And so as a community, we have to hold not only our schools accountable, but we have to hold our nonprofits and other agencies accountable as well.
We have time for one more question.
Hi there. My name's Cassidy Rosenthal. I'm a junior at Shabazz High School currently. And I was wondering, I mean, I think that everyone can pretty much agree that we definitely need some more resources and some more connection, all that stuff in the schools and in the classroom. But I was wondering how, I guess, you would propose that we, as a district, are able to combat all of the maybe not so positive things that are happening in every student's life so that when they enter the classroom that they're in a place where they're able to learn and take advantage of the resources that we're trying to provide for them.
You know, we have to create schools that are oases of cultural, instructional, and educational excellence. And the challenge is we focus a lot of energy on the instructional part. We don't necessarily understand what we mean by educational, and we definitely don't always deal with the cultural. That sort of runs amok by itself. And I see you clapping because you all know as students. And it's creating a sense of teamwork among young people, a sense of interdependence among young people. One of the things we're talking about is a scholars type program where it brings young people together who are focused on striving and helping each other to move forward, holding each other accountable. That's why I'm sitting on this stage right now. My peers did that for me and still do that. And on the educational side, it's what the school says to you. Does it tell you that you're excellent, that you're great, even when you don't think you are? Does it tell you that you're going to college, that there's no choice, there's no back door, you got to go out the front door? And so we've got to create schools like that. One of the things I propose, you all tell me afterwards what you think, is I told the superintendent this a couple months ago, create a school innovation center in the district. To get people to go from doing the new work, the old work, to the new work overnight is absolutely difficult, impossible. Businesses don't even try to do that, right? Unless they're really small. Create the center, hire the best superintendent who's had success or person, pay them top dollar. Don't ask the community for $100 million, ask them for 20. Ask the private sector to put 5 to 7 million of that money in there so they bear some of the burden because they're gonna get the outcome and the benefit of the talent that the district produces. So it's their investment, right? Have those folks, give them a team of people that are really top notch, and then let them work with those teachers that I talked about earlier. Recruit those 5 outstanding educators from every school, those principals, those professional support staff, nonprofit leaders, people who are getting results. And then you use them to identify what are the things that are going on in the district right here that we could replicate. Who are the teachers that could be used as educators of educators and educators of parents? And then also look outside the district and take a year to put together a plan, a strategy, that then you can roll out some of those strategies in 3 to 5 schools. We tried to propose that in one school with Madison Prep, but people didn't get us to the, we couldn't get to the point where we could explain our school as being a vehicle like that. But setting Madison Prep aside for a second, we could do that throughout this district. And then, so that's what I proposed to him, so that you're asking people to still run the district, but then you've got you're creating a future for yourself right here. So that's just an idea, one way to get at what you're talking about to deal with all those complex challenges.
At this time, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna wrap up. You're listening to 1310 WIBA 92.1, The Mic. We'll be back live from the Barrymore.
You're listening to a special town hall edition of Outreach Live from the Barrymore Theater. Once again, here's Darrell Connor.
I want to take this opportunity to thank Ed Hughes, Lucy Mathiak, Michael Johnson, Kaleem Kerr, Mary Burke, and Michael Flores for joining us tonight. I want to thank all of you for being here and taking the time out of your busy schedules to be with us to talk about this issue. This is not going to end here, folks. We're going to continue to talk about this issue. We as a community, we have to wrap our arms around this. We have to deal with it, because if we don't, the kids lose. So with that, thank you so much. I appreciate all of you being here from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much. And we will continue to do this in the future. Good night, everybody. You're listening to the 1310 WIBA 92.1 The Mic.